This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about probate law. I am here today with barrister Miss Lydia Pemberton from Three Paper Building Chambers in London. Lydia is a barrister who has extensive understanding and considerable experience of contentious probate matters. Her practice covers all areas regarding the validity of wills and testamentary dispositions. Lydia has acted for a large number of Inheritance Act cases and has a vast amount of experience of tolata claims. She also regularly appears in trials and ADRs in respect of claims for declaratory relief and consequential orders. Did I say that right, Lydia? Was that correct, Babette?
Yes, that's perfect.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And here we are with probate. And we were only just saying, Lydia, weren't we, how this area of law is becoming more and more tapped into by the younger generation as inheritance is coming into play with the baby boom generation that we're having.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's start from the top and let's just explain what we mean by probate. What do we mean by probate?
So when a person dies, somebody has to be able to deal with anything they've left behind, which includes, I have to say, Hattie, the dead body itself. But that is probably a topic for another day.
Yes.
So the word probate is a Latin word. It means to prove. It's just the legal term that explains the process that allows somebody to deal with the estate of the dead person.
Right.
So estate, to explain that word as well, in basic terms means what the deceased had and what they owed. And so we'll see in paperwork that comes through when you're dealing with a probate is the gross estate. So that's all the assets before tax and debts, and then the net estate. And that's the important one, really, what's left and who's going to get it. I should also say that there is perhaps a belief still that debts die with a person. They don't. They're very much alive, and creditors are very much interested in getting their payment.
That's very interesting, because when we carried out our market research on probate, that was one of the most predominant points that came up, that debt dies with the person. So you can inherit debt. That's what we're saying?
Yeah, so
I know we're jumping the gun now.
So the person who ends up taking charge of the estate, so what's left and what has to be dealt with, is obliged by law to pay the debts first.
Before the inheritance is divvied up.
Yeah, and you also have people dying and their estates are insolvent. So there basically is not enough there to pay the debts that remain.
Wow.
So that's a task that very few people want to voluntarily take on in sorting out an estate like that. The person that I refer to who takes charge of the estate is known as the personal representative. Now, that's an umbrella term, perhaps unhelpful, but it means an executor under a will.
Yes.
It means an administer appointed where there isn't a will.
And you get that. That's been, I used to hear that term a lot when I was younger. You know, so-and-so is the executor of the will. And I used to think, well, what does that mean, being an executor of the will? I know we're going to look at that, but perhaps we should just very quickly explain what it means to be the executor. If you agree to be somebody's executor of their will while they're alive, they say, oh, can I nominate you on my will? You think, oh, that sounds like a very sort of serious title. What does that mean?
Well, I think it can be a very serious title. So just dealing specifically, if you're appointed, and there's a lot of archaic legal terminology here, which isn't generally helpful to the public, but it's where we're at still. If you're appointed as an executor under a will, you are formally charged with the task of gathering in the assets of the estate, paying the debts, identifying and paying out the inheritances in accordance with the terms of the will. Now, as an executor, you have the same obligations as you would if you voluntarily took on the role of administrator, where there isn't a will. Both are called personal representatives, but it's just the names are different for whether there's a will or not.
Right.
You both have the rights to deal with the estate and
the
obligations.
Responsibility of doing so. Yeah. Because, you know, there are cases where the executor of the will didn't really do the job. Or didn't do it thoroughly or properly. And then they get their comeuppance, don't they? That becomes a legal issue in itself.
It does. So I think my advice to anybody would be, if they find out that they've been appointed as an executor before the person has died, if you can, have a chat with a person to say, look, I'm not really sure I'm comfortable with doing
this. If you're not.
Yeah. Absolutely not, because it can be an absolutely thankless task. Because we have to remember, if you are a lay person, so if it's just you or I acting for a family member, we're entitled to charge our reasonable expenses. So the cost of getting the grant of probate we can get from the deceased estate, the photocopying costs of sending out copies of wills.
It's the time. Imagine
but we're not
you have
entitled.
Well, this is the thing. Imagine you have to take lots of time off of work, or, you know, your work starts to suffer, or the time you dedicate perhaps to your family could be very time, because if you have a young family perhaps or family members that are not so well, etc., it's very time consuming. It's a lot of work. It could be a lot of work. I mean, you know,
it depends.
If there's lots of assets and debts.
It depends on the nature of the estate and the value of the estate.
It's the size of it.
Yeah. I think I've said it's a thankless task, and it is, because what you may find, if you are an executor who is also a beneficiary, and that's very common, so a family member, for example, mum writes a will appointing both children as executors and leaving half the estate to one child, 25% to the other child, and 25% to grandchildren. So you have executors who are in charge of sorting out the estate, but equally they have a personal interest in it.
They're going to inherit from that.
Exactly.
Being a beneficiary means you're going to inherit benefit from that.
And if you're an executor, or even if you're an administrator when there hasn't been a will, there may already be family rifts in existence that you are then having to, in many ways, arbitrate or umpire. And it's amazing how many family rifts come about once somebody's died.
I actually will look up the statistics of that and perhaps put that into our part two, because certainly I've heard a sufficient amount of cases where their family rifts come about once a probate comes into play, once it's time to divvy up a will. Lots of upset, lots of angry words, lots of accusations. Mm-hmm. And this is why probate law, in terms of the lawyers are busy, because not just carrying out the probate, doing the legal standard stuff that needs to be done with the executor taking charge, executors, but also sorting out these problems. And there's been lots of reported large cases and small cases. It doesn't have to mean that there has to be a huge asset base for there to be a problem. It could be over a single property of a not so significant value as well. If there's problems, there's problems.
Yeah, the nature of this beast, so the problem with probate, and it's the same when a couple gets divorced and you have to sort out the money there. The problem is, it comes at a point in life where you're probably in the worst position to try and deal with these things.
Yes.
Because you are grieving.
Yes.
And then having to deal with quite complicated administrative processes as well, and then end up in a war with
a
brother, a father,
etc. Potentially. That involves, you know, legalities that you've never had to deal with before, or you don't really have a great understanding of before. No, I get it. I think we've already said some really useful things. So we've explained what probate is, we're saying what an executor is, and the fact that if you're an administrator, it means that you're an administrator of the will of the estate if there's no will.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So the next question, what happens if somebody dies without leaving a will? And we had a case very recently where we were contacted by a lady whose husband died very suddenly and didn't leave a will. And she was in absolute bits, obviously grieving her husband, but also because she thought she was going to lose her home. She didn't realise or didn't know what's going to happen to our assets and our home, our marital assets, because he didn't write it down. There's no will to say I get it as his wife. So what happens if somebody dies without leaving a will?
So the point of a will in this country, where we don't have what's called forced heirship, so you can, subject to some exceptions which are outside this topic where people can make challenges to the will. You and I die and we can leave our estate to whomsoever we choose. We can appoint as our executor whomsoever we choose. If you die and you haven't left a will, what you've done is you've removed your choice of saying where your assets can go and who can step into your shoes and administer the estate. So if you die without a will, or a valid will, because you may have made a will that turns out not to be valid, you die what's called intestate. And again, that's an archaic word, it's an old word, but it's still the one that we see on the papers and that we still use. You can also have a case of partial intestacy where part of your will fails. But if we just keep it simple, you die with a will or you die without a will and you're intestate. Now, who takes charge of the process? And it's still under the umbrella of probate because you go to the probate registry. Who takes charge of that process is dictated by a statute which says, depending on which family members are alive, they take in priority.
Right.
So in the case you just mentioned, husband dies, wife is the first in line to be able to take out what's called a grant of letters of administration. And that's where we get the word administrator from. Unlike an executor who gets their power to act from the document, the will itself, nobody has the power to act until they've got that grant of letters of administration. And the fundamental point, and this is what appears to have been overlooked by the person you just mentioned, is that you die without leaving a will and the law will dictate where your assets pass to. So matters can become very, very quickly contentious because
with other family members, potentially, if you've got adult children, or you've got
arguing,
your husband or wife who passed had siblings who say, oh, well, I'm the brother, I'm the sister, I help build that, you know, business or house or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the most important question to most people, because we're human beings, is what do I get from this estate? So, rough and ready terms, if you're the husband or wife or the civil partner, as of 6th of February this year, anybody dying in the last few weeks, if they die without a will, if their estate is worth £270,000, it goes straight to the spouse or the civil partner.
Right.
And that's gone up 20 grand from prior to the 6th
of February
this year.
We're talking of the value, not the equity here.
What's left? The value.
Right. So it's literally the value of the home. So say you've got a home that's worth half
all
a million.
All the assets.
Right. So if we're saying, say there's a property and it's worth half a million.
Yes.
And there's £270,000 equity. Does it mean the whole house?
Well, the whole house will pass. It's subject to a mortgage.
So it's the house. If the house has got £270,000 equity and there's no other asset, for argument's sake, we're saying that will pass without the tax implications being...
Yes, so we're trespassing now on inheritance tax. So just briefly, at the moment, an individual dies and they've got what's called a threshold of £325,000, before which the taxman says, I'm now going to take 40% of anything above that.
So is that on the equity or the value?
It's the value of the estate after
the
debts
have been
paid.
So the whole value, so we have the value of the property.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep, so your example of it being below 270 means there wouldn't be any IHT payable, but if it's passing to a spouse anyway... there's no IHT payable.
Right, on the inheritance tax.
Yes, sorry, inheritance tax. On the death of the second spouse, the second to die,
yes,
if nobody's used any of their inheritance
tax allowance,
then there is potentially £650,000 value in the estate before the taxman says he'll take his cut.
Right.
So the point about the intestacy is that the value of the estate... net value of the estate, the spouse gets the first £270,000,
right,
and 50% of the balance. So if there's nothing more than 270, spouse or civil partner gets everything, any children don't receive a thing. If there are children, first 270,000 to spouse or civil partner, plus all the personal possessions, whatever the value, half of the remaining estate. And then the children take the remaining 50%.
And if there's no children?
Spouse gets everything.
Right. Okay. That's very clear cut.
So, now, if there is, taking away the spouse, no children, everything to spouse or civil partner, spouse and children, and then it's split in the way of the balance. After that, if you were to look at a flowchart, it all becomes bizarrely complicated, and it culminates essentially once you're out of the last family member, which from memory is a half aunt or half uncle.
Right.
If nobody else, there's nobody else beyond that line to whom the assets
inherit,
can go,
yes.
And it goes to the crown. And so, as we know, the Queen and Charlie and all those people,
yes.
They're the ones in need of money.
Yes.
So,
yes.
It is important to think about what is going to happen if you don't leave a will.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't really
well,
come
has
into
something
play.
Well, it has to happen to it,
yes.
Doesn't it?
It does,
I mean,
yeah.
And if we sat there and said, and you know, and this is just really speaking off the top of my head, oh, well, it should go to charities. But who decides which charities?
Yeah.
And naturally, the persons that could be nominated to choose a charity, instead of it going to the Crown, for example, may choose charities that they're aware of, they're favourable of, and then there'll be a criticism there. Oh, well, those charities are not so worthy. So Queenie gets the lot.
Yep.
If the food chain, all
yep.
the way down the line, there's siblings, aunts, and then you get to the last point, which we're saying is a half uncle or half aunt,
yep.
Doesn't exist, then it goes to the Crown. If there is no will and that person dies in what is called intestacy,
yeah.
which is what something is called when somebody dies with no will.
And this okay. is where you get your, people listening may have heard of like heir hunters or other genealogy
yes.
specialists. And these are people who trace the distant relatives to say such and such has died. They haven't got a wife or a spouse.
They probably take a percentage, don't
they,
Lydia,
of
what... Well, that makes sense. I mean, is there a time frame? So say somebody dies in intestate, there's been no will, they've got assets. Is there a time frame before the Crown inherits it all?
It would have to be the person who has stepped in as the administrator to carry out their investigations. And if it got to the point where they said, look, we have done as much as we can and we can't trace anybody else, either they simply distribute the estate to the Crown or they can go to court and get the sanction of the court to protect themselves in the event that somebody comes forward. And you can
right.
also get missing beneficiary insurance. But ultimately, anybody doing the role of executor or administrator, if there is a question mark over who is entitled, you can take the issue to the court.
Yes.
The
yes.
matters can end up there.
Yes.
Just 2 points I do want to make on the intestacy, because I think this is, again, a common misconception. It comes back to your example of the wife being concerned that the husband
yes.
has died without doing anything. I think two candidates where there can be a misconception is people who aren't married but live together.
And they're
there
not
is no,
and they're not civil partnership either.
No civil partnership, no spouse.
Yeah.
If they live together, or you're or you're in a long-term partnership, but you don't live together, you are not entitled
yes.
under the rules of intestacy.
Yes. yes.
And so people can come very unstuck after, say, a 30-year period of cohabitation.
Yes.
And they don't get anything if there isn't a will.
It's now, very interesting you say that, because we cover a lot of stuff on our part one of our cohabitation relationships, and this is interesting to actually expand on further, because there are actually, I think the number was, there's quite a few million people cohabiting in the UK. We cover the numbers in our cohabiting podcast, and this is a very serious actually area of law for them, because you naturally probably do build up everything that you have together, probably, if you're living together.
Yes.
And you're not entitled to anything if you're partner that you're not married to by way of marriage or civil partnership doesn't have a will.
Yeah, well, you're not entitled to their assets. So we may touch on this later. If you jointly own assets
yes.
with your partner,
yes.
that's different. But if the house is in his name or her name, if he had a bank account and you made contributions to it, but you never had a joint bank account, if investments or savings were held in his or her name.
Yes.
He dies, they on the face of it form part of his or her estate. And that leaves you. Now, the law does protect you, but you are on the back foot because you're the one having to go to the court to say, but I made contributions to that property and
yes.
I actually really do own part of it.
Yes.
Or I made
or
contributions to...
Yes.
I do. But on the face of it, you're on the back foot.
Mm.
You're the one having to say, I have an interest in that. Whereas actually, if partner had just made a will, all that could have been avoided.
I mean, I think we need to just expand a little bit more on intestacy, Lydia, because what the question that we're going to move on to does help, but say if your children are young. So you've got young children under the age of 16, your partner's died, there is no will, the first 270,000 comes to you, and then the other 50% of the estate, say there's another 100,000 for argument's sake. So in normal terms, you would get 50,000 and the other 50,000 would go to the children. Does it go to the children even if they're underage?
The law used to be that it was held on
trust
statutory trusts for them. You know, a minor can't take... there would still have to be some sort of trust
in
established
place.
For them, yes.
But they will get it even if they're underage, we're saying.
Yes,
matter what, whether they're adult children, young children, they will automatically get 50% of 50%.
Yes.
Of... after the first 270,000.
Yes, the children are entitled to that, absolutely. Yes. There would then have to be a procedure set in place as to how that's going to be operated and when they get it.
Yes.
There are then some slightly obscure rules as to if a child has predeceased the intestate parent, but there are perhaps grandchildren, but I'm not going to touch on that now, because I think in most situations people just want to know what's happening to the children and the spouse.
Yes.
That touches on slightly the other other misconception that may arise as to which children can inherit. So you can't inherit as a stepchild regardless of the length of marriage. You can only inherit as a child or a biological child or a
adopted child.
Yeah.
Unless you're in the will.
Oh, just in the will, yes. Just dealing with intestacy.
Yes.
And this leads on to what's called sideways disinheritance. So the example that I would give, second marriage cases or second civil partnership cases, of the second marriage, there are children from each first marriage, but there's no will. So what happens is the second husband dies, and his first 270 goes to second wife, 50% of the balance to second wife, 50% remaining to his children from the first marriage.
Yes.
Now that might be a lot, it might be nothing. Second wife then dies and has made a will leaving it all to her children only, or doesn't make a will and doesn't remarry, and it goes to her children.
Only.
So what can then happen? And of course, these deaths can take place in a very short period of time. And on an intestacy, you only have to survive 28 days.
Right.
So second wife or second husband dies in a very short period of time, having taken a substantial amount of money from the spouse. And then that then passes to her children.
And not to deceased husband's children.
Yeah. And he may have been the one that brought in the wealth. And in fact,
yes.
I have a number of cases where the wealth of the husband has actually come from the first wife.
Yes.
So we have this pot of, like, floating pot of money that's never really been spent, that's gone from first wife's death to the husband. Husband remarries, passes to second wife dies, and the pot passes to her children.
Yes, so that's she's had, not the husband's children from the first marriage.
Yeah.
That's actually more common than we think,
yes.
To be honest. And I've seen a couple of cases where that has been a big reason for lots of litigation very quickly, because the children from the first marriage come up and say, well, hold on, what about us?
Yeah. I mean, there are a number of ways, and I think we may discuss this later, there are a number of ways that a challenge can be mounted to the validity of the will, to say, you know, if there is a will, or to a challenge made by the children under what's called the Inheritance Provision for Family Independence Act 1975, pithy title. But under that 1975 Act, a child of the deceased can say, I've been left nothing from this estate.
Yes.
That, therefore, doesn't make reasonable financial provision for my maintenance.
Contested probate.
And
That's the wonderful term.
It is. So
and that's a big area of law.
Oh, and yes, it's a lot of my practice. And I have people arguing over estates which are worth 150 grand. I have people arguing over estates which are worth 2.5 million.
Yes.
And the issues are always the same. People are grief-stricken. Some people are greedy. And it becomes an argument over what people think they deserve.
They are entitled to.
What other people don't deserve.
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, contested probate is very interesting because, and I do want to cover that in our next podcast, because what that actually means is even with a will, it's not guaranteed that your wishes in a will be executed exactly as your will says. Because if your will is contested by somebody that could be in the will or maybe is not even in the will, there could be legal argument for your will to be distributed in different ways.
Yes. And there is, so that is the challenge made under the 1975 Act isn't a challenge to the will. That's saying we accept the validity of the will, but we don't accept that the dispositions, so the gifts that you've made,
yes,
make reasonable financial provision for us.
Them.
And so what the court can then do is, it's a closed category of people who can apply, but if you qualify to apply, then you're saying to the court, this doesn't make reasonable financial provision for my maintenance, unless you're a spouse or civil partner, and it's just reasonable financial provision, you're not limited to maintenance. Parliament hasn't told us what maintenance means, so it's a case-by-case basis. And the judge dealing with it will say, I've made an objective assessment and I think it does or doesn't. And if the will or intestacy doesn't, the judge, in his or her absolute discretion, subject to not
the
making
moral
a
of the
crazy
story
decision,
is, I mean, we've
make
all
a will.
It's the law, isn't it? Just try and agree things yourselves, because otherwise the judge is agreeing it for you. And
yeah.
and in some cases that does work out better for the person or persons that are saying, I'm contesting this will, I'm contesting this probate, I want to be included, or not enough was left for me. And that's all we've got time for.
Well,
so we hoped to get past 10 questions, but I think we did 3 and a bit.
Right. Okay.
So we will certainly pick up on this again in a part 2. It's very interesting and very current, I think, Lydia. Thank you ever so much for your time.
Thank you.
Don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes.